Welcome to TopCon Talks Agriculture. I'm your host, Jared Oakes, the Global Product Manager for TopCon Agriculture Platform, TAP. And today on the podcast, we are excited to have Mr. Scott Budke. Scott Budke is the owner and proprietary of Budke Precision Ag Solutions. Scott, how are you today?
I'm doing good, Jared. Thank you very much for having me on the show today.
All the appreciation is on our side. You are a wealth of information on many topics, and we really appreciate you coming on and talking to some of our listeners about some really important topics that they're facing. Are everything going okay in kind of your neck of the woods? You got to have a positive outlook on things kind of in today's yes. Scenario, you know?
Yeah, no, I think we're setting ourselves up for a good year. So far, 21 has been pretty favorable. The market prices are looking good.
Yes.
We could use a little moisture, but other than that, yeah, we got a lot of optimism. Seems like guys are optimistic this year, feeling pretty good. Mm-hmm. Lot more so than I would say they were a year ago at this date.
I'd agree, but it really seems like the last few springs have, it seems like that's more and more. You know, we get later and later on planting, and the windows get more and more difficult, you know, some of the data and some of the decisions really come into play maybe more than they have in the past. I don't know if that's maybe because we're becoming more familiar with how to use some of that information or I don't know. Maybe it's just a kind of a digital transition. But yeah, I agree. Lots of people excited about the season.
Yes. And I think one thing is we let the technology, you know, we sit here and we listen to all these things on the news, or we read them in the farm magazines, at all the new technology that's coming, and it starts to intimidate us a little bit. So then we're already starting to be a little intimidated before we even hit the ground running.
Yeah, that's a good point. Almost like we've kind of psychologically lost the game before the whistle's even blown, you know?
Yes. Yeah. Hey,
for some of our listeners, Scott, that may not know, you know, maybe they don't know Budke Precision Ag Solutions, or maybe they're not exactly sure. Let's give the listeners a bit of breakdown. I know, you know, you've got 20 years of history in the precision ag and, you know, agriculture equipment, retail, ag retail spaces, all, you know, experience as far as the eye can see. But can you just sort of encapsulate for the listener, who are you and what do you kind of do and what is kind of your day to day? Just give them a bit of an idea of, you know, what you're up to.
Sure. So, I was born and raised on a farm in central Illinois. Mom, she worked off the farm as well. Things just kind of progressed. I'd love to farm. Didn't quite get the opportunity that I was hoping for, but went to college, then ended up a couple little jobs, but landed a job working as a John Deere partsman. Started that my early career in the mid-90s, and was asked to then go into sales. Or then at the start of this precision farming era, I was able to kind of get in on the ground level. And so I ran we had a two-store John Deere dealership, and I ran the precision, the AMS department, as we called them.
Yep. Back in the day, AMS before it was ISG. Yeah, that's right.
Yep. So then I was the integrated solutions manager for the dealership. Mm-hmm. 2014, we were bought out, and I just didn't feel that I was cut out to be a corporate player. I'm more of a team player, and that wasn't working out. So I decided to take the lunge and go out into business myself. You know, I had a lot of the relationships built, and very good relationships with my customers. And probably 90% of them I still work with today in some fashion or another.
Great.
So it's really worked out good. So our business has expanded a lot. I've brought my son into the business. He's working with me. So that's helped. So our main focus is, I guess I kind of tell people we do data management.
Okay.
And we're really getting into a lot of, in our area right here, we're very heavily irrigated in central Illinois. So we are, one of our main focuses in today's business is helping guys do a better job of irrigating. So we're working on irrigation management platforms. We use a lot of soil moisture probes and trying to make a difference to help these guys on a couple different ways, being better stewards to the land. You know, some of the hottest topics right now out there are fertility and water, which are our two biggest things that we need to grow a crop. So we've got to learn how we can do a better job.
Yeah, water is definitely king, and that soil solution, I guess I would refer to it as, is really paramount, isn't it? Especially as you get into some really demanding conditions in the season, how you've prepared that I guess profile, that'd be the right terminology to use, right? How you prepared that profile is really, really critical. So
correct.
It's amazing. You've kind of gone through your whole history there. Thank you for sharing that, you know, with everyone here that would listen. And I think what's really so cool about that is now you've got your own business, and all you focus on is data and working with growers to turn information into a profitable decision, or help them kind of maybe manage or attempt to at least mitigate some risks. Is that kind of a decent way to sort of quantify what you're doing on a day to day?
Yes. It's the thing that I like about it. It's something unique and different every day. You know, you never know what the next phone call is going to bring. And that's kind of neat. It's kind of challenging at times, but I really like it.
Every day is interesting for sure. And you know, I think the title or the topic of, you know, of this podcast probably be titled this way, you know, when it's prepared and then released. This isn't obviously a live show. The topic is, you know, is this just a bunch of data? And it's essentially, we're going to talk with you today, Scott, about kind of data silos and how some of this information might be kind of locked into areas or different systems. And we, you know, we won't get into all the names or brands or anything like that, but I think our listeners can definitely appreciate and understand there's a lot of data, and maybe they're in maybe a data gathering phase, or maybe they feel like they're progressing through kind of what they might describe as their data journey. How would you like to start today? You've given us a little background on yourself, and we just want to let you kind of jump right in. You have a wealth of experience with a wide array of growers that are probably varying comfort levels as well, I'm assuming, right, Scott?
Oh, yeah. You go all the way from the guy that's just starting in this space to the guys that's been doing it since the beginning.
That's a great point for our listeners. So if they're out there and they're just kind of getting started, what you're saying is they're not alone. There's lots of folks out there just like them.
That's exactly right. Yeah, there's guys that have been slow to adopt the technology. Mm-hmm. There's guys that have jumped in with both feet. So, and that's what's really cool. It's you get to work with a wide variety of growers that has a knowledge level from basically zero to another grower that's basically got a knowledge level of a 10, you know. So
yeah,
it's really unique to be able to help those guys. And
yeah,
my philosophy at the end of the day, I try to every day figure out how I'm going to help somebody take their operation to the next level. And that's always been kind of my goal and motto and my back of my mind that I help guys with.
Yes, I'm sure a lot of the operations that you're working with, they've got specific goals or specific areas. Maybe some of it is heavily around data. Maybe some of it is more fundamental. But you're able to guide them and shepherd them through that process and kind of nurture them along. Really a true trusted advisor. Right.
Yeah, I would say that's the way a lot of them look at me. Is they're, you know, whether I help them an hour a year or 40 hours a year or whatever it might be, they still always think of me as their guy to go, their go-to guy.
Interesting. So it's a real flexible model. Customers can essentially kind of use you as little or as much as they are comfortable with or as they feel like they need. So on, on any given season, or maybe even last season or what you're planning on this season, what's the buzz? What's going on? What are you seeing with most of your customers, you know, in regards to, I guess, you know, how locked some of that data is, and also what cool technologies or what cool data sets are you realizing and your customers realizing a lot of value from?
Well, you know, as we continue to...
What's the secret? Tell us all the secrets, Scott, so we don't have to figure it out. Just give us the answer. Come on.
Well, I don't think there's any one answer for anybody. And that's what I tell guys. You know, I'm not here to tell you what to do. I'm here to help you make sense of the data that you have collected. Because ultimately, the grower knows his land the best. He's been there the longest and he knows it. So all we're trying to do is helping take the data that he's collecting, using, and find a way that it can be informational to his operation.
And do you find, you know, when you sort of make that data breakthrough, maybe with like a newer customer, maybe one of our listeners is like that. They're getting started. Maybe they've been collecting and gathering data. There's probably a lot of customers that are in that scenario, right? They've just been capturing information, but they've never had that breakthrough moment where maybe they're visualizing some data for the first time with perhaps an expert like yourself that's kind of able to shepherd them through that process. And there's sort of that aha moment where they see that the data is in fact confirming what they have known about their land all along. Can you tell some of our listeners, is that a real thing? Does that happen?
Sure it does. Yeah. And first thing, I don't feel that I'm any expert to this because, I'd say we learn new things every day. You know, I feel that it's very important to have an open-minded outlook. And if you don't have that, then there's a lot of things that we don't pick up on. You know, it's just kind of like having a pair of blinders. If you're looking not to the sides and the full view, you're going to miss something. And that's what we find so much. You know, a lot of guys, the biggest thing with growers now is they have so many things they got to do. You know, we're looking at buying seed, checking the different seed types out, the new varieties coming out, the new fertilizers coming out, the new pesticides, everything they're being slammed with. And then on top of trying to collect data and make decisions based off that data. So if there's a way that we can help them take that data and put it into usable formats to help make, I guess you would say, actionable decisions on that data.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. You know, as the product manager, product owner for the Topcon agriculture platform, our web platform here at Topcon, kind of like maybe a shameless plug for our product, but that's what we're aiming to do, you know, is give the farmer essentially a plug and play or kind of a drag and drop solution. So they don't need to spend a lot of time on the computer, because we know they just don't really want to do that. They just want to farm, and they'd like the computer to help them, not be another tool they have to figure out how to use or operate, et cetera. Right?
Exactly. No, exactly. And things are so much different in the ag world than what they used to be, you know, 20 years ago when this all started. You know, we had a lot of smaller farms. We had, you know, more of your family farm that was there where, you know, and we don't see that nearly like it was, you know, whether it be good, bad, or indifferent. That's the time we are in today. Everything's gotten bigger, you know. Is bigger better? Who knows? We don't, you know.
And more connected machines, you know, more, you know, the data layers now are kind of exponentially growing.
Right.
I can remember, I guess maybe the good old days where, you know, a yield map was kind of the only thing you had. And then it became maybe a seeding map where you had, you know, total seeds or total mass applied and maybe an elevation layer. But now we've got.
Or it might have been just a pretty map to look at and set on your desk.
It could have been.
You know, and we laugh at that. But in all honesty, if you sit down with a lot of growers and you say, okay, what did you learn from that yield map? And they really don't stop to think about what all the there's so many things that are embedded, I will say, into that map that if you sit there and study it, you can start to pick out a lot of trends. Especially if you can overlay it with like a seeding map. Well, then you start to look at, well, maybe this variety didn't
perform. Yep.
Perform as good as the next variety next to it. If you had a split planter, well, maybe you did some trials. Well, maybe this trial didn't work as well as this. And, you know, and it can come down to as little things as having an irrigation nozzle plugged up. You can see that on the map. Or, you know, you had an area here in the field that had a problem. I really like to start with that. And especially a guy that has not done a lot of data management or precision data, just getting started, you know, he knows he's got to do it. It's going to be a thing of the future, going to be required to do this and that possibly at some point.
It's kind of a keep it simple philosophy to get started. Yeah. Are you having some discussions with your clients, Scott, where are some of your folks sort of on the fence, I suppose, maybe on you know, sort of torn between, I guess, these maps and these data sets and these potential insights and decisions, like some of the ones you're giving us examples of, are they somewhat on the fence if this is really useful? You know, is it just a bunch of data that they're gathering? Or, I mean, give us an idea of the span across some of your growers. I'm sure our listeners could relate and say, yeah, that, I identify with that, or no, I identify with that. Can you talk us through maybe various steps of that journey? Where do you see things really start to transform for your customers as they go through and kind of get into this data analysis mindset?
Yeah, that's a good question, Jared. It's again, it's all over the board, and I think, you know, it gets to the point where some of these guys are forced to do it because their landlord says, hey, I want to see soil maps. I want to see harvest maps. I want to see this. And it's forcing them to start down this road of how do I collect this? And with all these new equipment, you know, with a sensor now, we can basically figure out almost virtually about 90% of everything that's happening on that machine with the sensor and AI, with artificial intelligence and that, those two things work so much. So that means even more data that we're collecting off of that machine coming in. Well, and then we got to start to figure out, well, how do we sort that data out from stuff that's kind of somewhat useful to stuff that's very useful?
Yeah. And that, I think that really cuts the topic right to the bone. I really do. I think from my experience, Scott, maybe you agree, or maybe you have a different experience, but quite often when you begin to load some of these files from, you know, various brands of systems, and there's lots of great product out there, you know, for growers to use today. But when they start to load it into systems or websites or whatever that may be, you know, what the end result that they see on those screens, it doesn't necessarily match what they maybe thought they were gathering kind of on the consoles. It's, I mean, I don't want to call it a mess. I don't think that would be maybe fair to the listeners. Honestly, I think it's our responsibility as technology manufacturers to self-cleanse that information. But, you know, we haven't quite gotten there yet. You know, walk us through that moment when a grower is excited, you know, it brings you a USB card, or they start their sign their contract with you to work with you or whatever. And they, you know, they kind of come bouncing in with their data and you load it up and it's not what, you know, it was expected. So then the real work begins, right?
Exactly. You know, and the thing is people do not understand what it takes to clean some of this data and make it into make it usable data. You know, you can spend on a 2,000 acre farm, if a guy brings me a USB stick and,
yeah,
you know, the first thing that you're going to see is I've got 5 north fields and a lot of duplicates.
Yeah. A lot of duplicates. Sure. We see that a lot.
Yeah. Because you've got a hired hand that's putting it in. He's looking for the right field. Can't find it. Well, what's the next best thing?
Adds it
gotta
in.
Get yep. going. I got to put another field in. So then the first thing we got to start doing is we got to merge that data together to get it all in the same field. And then you've got boundary issues. You've got, So that's the first thing, is just getting the data in a usable format where it's, you know, you got your grower, client, or farm field, and, you know, your data tree and
your structure, just like in your file cabinet at the house, you've got a expenses folder, and inside of that expenses folder, you might have the electric bill and the trash. You just start to compartmentalize those. So what advice is, you know, someone like yourself who's seen these structures, these grower farm field or client farm field structures on, I'm assuming, thousands of data sets. What advice would you give? Like, where do you see folks go wrong? Is it the naming convention isn't clean? Is it, you know, they just make it overcomplicated? What goes wrong? Give our users some insight into what should they, and again, I know you don't want to tell them maybe how they should do something, but maybe what advice could you give to someone about even something as simple as just what they're naming things?
Right. You know, and that's a funny question, because when we all started this back years ago, we were thinking about how to name it. We tried to name it to what we called the field. Well, you know, maybe we named it the Southwest 40 with the tree. Well, now that tree's gone and nobody knows where the Southwest 40 with the tree is. So,
or that Southwest 40's turned into an 80 now, but
exactly.
We still call it. Yeah, that's right.
So a lot of guys try to make it very overcomplicated, which I try to just, and I'm very, very particular on getting that tree set up right.
When you say tree, you're not referencing that Southwest 40 tree. You mean this structure, this grower farm field. You call that the tree. Okay, go ahead, Scott.
The structure tree. Yes. So I just, if it, you know, you see so many that'll be lowercase letters, and then the next one will be all uppercase, and then you'll have a partial uppercase.
Spaces, no spaces, things like that. Yep. Okay. So that stuff really, really matters then. You're saying to these listeners, hey, clean that stuff up and make it accurate. Take your time and stop or be sure before you add a field into your system. You might really be hurting yourself is kind of what I hear you giving for advice. Is that right?
That's exactly right. Because, you know, if you're bringing your data to me and I got to do that, that's costing you extra money.
And I guess it's ultimately maybe a risk to some data loss, right? Maybe something gets kind of lost out there in the ether or the cloud or whatever.
Outer space. Yes.
Yep. And it gets kind of lost. So again, back to that filing cabinet analogy, if that electric bill slips back into the, you know, the insurance paperwork, it's sort of gone until you just randomly going through and you say, hey, this shouldn't be in here. Probably quite a bit of that happening, right?
Yes.
You know, what do you find that with, you know, maybe the yearly cycles that you go through with growers, is it 50% data cleanup or is it 20? Or do you feel like there's kind of a breakthrough? It's almost like converting to no-till or something. Like there's a 1 or 2, 3 year kind of a curve and then things get better. Or what is your assessment to give our listeners an idea of, you know, what it's going to take to, you know, how is this is a real commitment. It sounds like they need to be committed to keeping this information accurate and clean.
Yeah. And don't try to rush through it. In all honesty, I've got guys that's got yield maps since back in the late 90s. And it, you know, we still look at them at times just to go back and get a reference. But the thing is don't rush it because it's not going to happen overnight.
Yeah. Keep it simple. Start small. Excellent. Excellent. So
don't expect to have it all done in just this one year.
Yeah. Yeah. It definitely sounds like it's not just a scenario where you sit down and you fix it and then it's handled. It really is. It sounds like you're having a discussion with these growers that you kind of turn data. It sounds like maybe from a toy in a way to where it's just that map. It's just that thing that's kind of going on in the cab to a real, like a tool, a real asset for those customers, those growers, clients of yours. So they can really use the value that is in that data, it sounds like.
Right, exactly. And you know, you get from that point where a lot of guys say, oh, that data's worthless. Well, if you collected it, it's not worthless. If you've made a good attempt to put the effort into collecting it and collecting good data, there's a lot of useful things for that.
So other than the example you gave before was maybe whether it was something on irrigation, you know, flow consistency, maybe they need a new nozzle package. Maybe their flow has changed a bit or their something's worn out or like you said, something's plugged. You also gave an example, which I think is very, very common, maybe desired by many because it is a high input cost for them is variety and seed selection, you know, choosing from that germplasm. That seems to be a new game every year. What do you say to those listeners that are, maybe they're thinking, yeah, I'm just going to get the same varieties as next year, or I'm going to get varieties that are similar. Do you find that a lot of folks are actually doing plots or check strips or however you'd like to refer to them, Scott, to better make those decisions? Or do you find that some of the customers feel that, you know, the weather and things from season to season are as we know, unknown, unpredictable. So how much weight does that variety information have in their purchasing decision? Sounds like a lot.
It should. You know, it's funny because I've had so many guys, you know, say, well, man, this did really good for me this year, so I'm going to plant a lot more of that next year. Come next year, we look at the yield maps and do some analysis on it, and it was the worst corn they had. So, you know, I don't like to see guys put all their eggs in one basket. I like to spread the risk around, especially I think it's very important in today's ag economy that we eliminate as many risks as we can. So by, you know, planting some different varieties for your type of soil, and, you know, that's what your seed dealer's there for, to help you decide on how to make those decisions.
Yeah, it's definitely in the seed industry's interest to make you have the best, most highest yielding crop, I think, that you've had from season to season, for sure. But there's a lot to those decisions, isn't there? I've seen extremely high dollar varieties underperform because maybe they weren't seeded in the right conditions, or maybe they had pests come in. So the variety is only a portion of the story quite often, isn't it, Scott?
Yes. It's kind of everything that goes along with it. That's just one piece of the puzzle that you have to try to put together.
Now, are you, you said you're in, you know, in central Illinois, but you're serving customers all over the Midwest kind of virtually in your business model, Scott, is that right?
So yeah, I've got some customers that I work with, that I help do a lot of data management with, I've got a couple customers in Texas I work with. I've got a couple customers out west, and not a lot, but like I told them, I said, you know, if you're willing to put your data there or let me log into yours and work with it, I can help you. And you know, that brings up another good point, that, you know, where you talk about variety of guys. You know, I've got some of the old school guys there that will absolutely not put anything out there where it goes to the web.
Okay.
And then I've got guys that will put everything up there. So, you know, you've got a very wide range of guys that you have to, you know, not cater to, but adjust your works to their operation.
Yeah. Interesting. Very interesting. So, is that an age thing sometimes that you're seeing, Scott, or with the growers, is it just sort of their philosophy on data ownership or data sharing or data accessibility? Okay.
It's their philosophy. You know, everybody, and is anyone right or wrong? No.
Everybody's
entitled to their own opinion. You know, I feel that, you know, I'm good with it.
Yeah.
But it's there at the end of the day, it's their data, and it's their option to do with it as they want.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, myself, there's, you know, that's always something that I think, you know, for those of us with kids, I'm sure many of our listeners do as well. Getting them to understand what systems you connect to, what you put out there. You put some of those things out there, you can't get them back, right? So I think that's smart for growers to really be sure how they're sharing information, how they're sending information, that they don't lose control of that data, because that's, you know, that is likely maybe even a larger component of ownership. Ownership is essentially access or control, and they absolutely control the access and control of that data because they originated it, they made it, they created it with their machinery. Yeah,
right.
So as growers walk through some of those things, and whether they're taking their information and loading it into a software application that maybe they're using, or maybe they have a local agronomist, or I guess I'll say you're in a way kind of a digital agronomist. You're not only working with some of the, I'm sure, in-field sensing systems and fertility, as you mentioned before, but also the digital side of it, the cloud side of it. Is there, there must be a demand. Your business is doing well. You have lots of clients and customers. Are the major agronomy folks, are they really coming on strong in that area too, Scott? Or are they really not getting involved as much with some of the data, the agronomists?
I guess it just depends. There's all different levels of agronomist, and there's all different levels of, you know, some of these other companies or organizations. You know, it's all different levels. I really like to think of growers, and I don't know if everybody kind of thinks of this, but this is how I think of it. You know, you've got your farmer, and then you got your seed dealer, you got your fertilizer dealer, and your agronomist. And I like to think of that I'm just part of that team, helping him, give him the ammunition that he needs to make good quality decisions.
And I think that is superb advice for a grower out there, because no matter what size of an operation they are, they likely do have the folks in some capacity that you just mentioned. They have an input supplier. Maybe it's seed and crop care products from the same place. Maybe it's multiples. But I guess the advice, I believe, the scenario you just described, kind of your methodology, thought process is surround yourself with those folks that are part of their team, not folks that maybe try to isolate themselves from those other partners in their business. Right.
Right. Right.
So a real open and sharing scenario. So if maybe that ag retailer also has, maybe they're commercial applicators, right? And they're applying some crop care products throughout the season. You're finding luck in retrieving those application maps so that they can contribute to that grower's overall data set. The scenarios like that are really important, right?
Well, exactly. Because, you know, that's when you start analyzing things and trying to figure out why this area in the field didn't produce, that's just another piece to the puzzle to be able to figure out why.
So growers that are out there looking at maybe just a yield map, it's important for them to understand that seeding layer, that product application layer, if they have the opportunity to get moisture layers or fertilizer layers, they really need to compare all those side by side. Essentially, it's an audit of how the activity went that contributed to the cropping system, right? That's really what they're looking for. On a lot of those maps, don't the growers' eyes just always go right to the green or always go right to the red, it seems?
For sure.
And what advice? Sorry, Scott, go ahead.
You know, it's always funny to hear some of their comments. Well, that was a really good area. I think it did better than that. Or, you know, wow, I don't know why that didn't do that way. Or, you know, it's always really interesting to hear their comments after we start to look at those maps.
And sometimes they know exactly why. You know, they'll say, there was a barn there 45 years ago that fell apart and the soil and everything still, you know, and no one would have known that, but them, mm-hmm. right?
It's comical. The one I get the most is when we're sitting down doing seeding maps. You know, I create probably, 50,000 acres or so of variable rate seeding maps. And
so seeding prescriptions where the system, the planner automatically varies the seeding rate, seeding density for that area. Okay, we're with you.
And, you know, we're setting it up for different populations, different soil types, different varieties, whether it be a fixed variety or a flex variety or whatever. But anyway, it's funny when you, because I always like to make these maps, and then I never will load a map into a monitor without sitting down with the grower to make sure he's comfortable with it. Because ultimately, he's the one making the decisions.
Yeah, comfortable with the seeding rate that you had set when you agreed upon. Yeah. I guess similar to how a doctor would prescribe medication. They would say this is what you need to feel better and to not have this ailment. And then they would prescribe take one of these in the morning or one with a meal. So you're finding that when they're in the cab and they're kind of looking over that agreed upon strategy, things sort of change, it sounds like, Scott.
Yes. Because you always sit down with them, they say, that area really should be more than 32,000. That's a really good area. But when we're making these maps, you know, I base a lot of my maps on a 5-year average of that field. You know, once we get a lot of data and we can do a multi-year yield analysis, what better way to create a seeding map is off of your last 5 years of corn yields?
Sure.
And maybe we kick out the highs and the lows and then we kind of make a map from there. But
you begin to understand ultimately what that field's capabilities are, right? So you're setting the seeding strategies based on what you've historically seen that field have the ability to yield. You're not shooting for the moon every season. Right. Really high fertilizer, high density, or vice versa. You're not kind of giving up before the game has even started. You're sort of playing the averages, right?
Right.
So you're finding with your story,
but it's really funny that you see guys all say, "Well, you know that yield, it's a lot better producing plate yield than that. We need to plant it at a higher rate." I'll say, "Well, okay, I'm not disagreeing with you, but how when our 5-year average yield there is X, why are we trying to do something that it can't do?"
So you're in the planter, just sort of, I guess, almost like farming by instinct in some cases, or maybe in some case, maybe farming kind of emotionally and not statistically. They'll sort of alter that number at maybe the last moment.
Yes.
Do they tell you about that typically before they do it, or is that something you find out typically after you analyze maybe seeding layers?
No, most of them will tell you. There's a few that'll try to slip something by, but you know, ultimately, it's at the end of the day, it's their field, they're responsible. I'm just trying to help.
Yeah. So that's I think really important for I think our listeners to kind of understand in a way what you've just said. Your business really creates a plan, a strategy with a grower, almost like a football team. Well, here I'm in Kansas City, so we're Chiefs fans, or they'll run you out of town. So I'm sure there's a strategy going into the Super Bowl, right? They have a game plan. We're going to do this. If this occurs, we'll maybe react in this way. You don't deviate from that plan. That seems like really sound advice in agriculture, especially considering the dollars, the risk, associated with some of these decisions. I understand, however, that game plans can slightly change if something's a bit too dry, et cetera. What when you get together with your clients and you're making this plan, this game plan, this strategy, this crop season strategy, which you've already given us multiple examples based on fertility and past year's performance and seed variety selections, and that may play into many other things. In a typical row crop scenario, or maybe here in Kansas, say for wheat, how soon or how early do you begin, preparing that game plan? Do you wait as soon as you can before it's, say, planting time, being sort of the football analogy, the first quarter, beginning of the season, I suppose? Or when do you sit down and kind of prepare those strategies, or does it differ?
Well, it differs with every grower, but actually I started back in December with some growers. They pretty much already know where they're going to have things and where things are going to be. So we'll start getting their data ready to go.
So as soon as you get that last data point then from the previous season, say harvesting, you begin your work, you begin your activity and begin to develop your plan.
And I like to try to have all my seeding recs done. My goal is to have them done by the end of February. Now, does that always happen? No, because we're always making changes. A guy will say, well, I need to get a different variety for that field, and I want to change the rates a little bit, and so on and so forth. But the
baseline plan is somewhat laid. Maybe you deviate a little here or a little bit there. So I'm following you. I think it's important for the listeners to understand, don't just plan only for the next activity. Think about that whole season as a full length plan and how those decisions may play in. That's correct. I think that's a really important insight that, again, folks shouldn't be overwhelmed by that, but it's a really important thing. And I know our grower listeners know how those things kind of piggyback, into one another as time goes on.
No, exactly.
As you look at this, is obviously your day to day. You wake up and you access files. That's what you do. That's your passion. What are you seeing are some of the biggest challenges, that we're still facing? It seems maybe not as bad as the past, but we still face so many. Is it data accessibility? Is it getting the data out of the machine? Is it these formats and all these systems, combinations of the ones I just mentioned, or something else? What are you thinking are some of the biggest challenges we face maybe as an industry and grower?
Again, it's a little bit of all. Okay. Like, it's kind of like all of the above. A lot of, systems have gotten better. Our OEM providers have made data transfer a lot simpler. Mm-hmm. Is it still where we need it to be? Probably not, but it is getting a lot simpler than having to go out and grab the SD card or the compact flash card or the USB drive and such. But it's still, in my opinion, it's still got a ways to go that we can make some big improvements. In the fall of year, you spend a lot of time just chasing around getting data. And that's a lot of effort to, time wasted that you could be doing other things, I guess you'd say.
Yeah, go get it. It's almost like having to drive to go get an email, right? You've got to physically travel there to get it. Okay.
Well, so that's one of them. And how we, Deere has made it a lot easier with data transfer or the operations center. Case has got their thing going on.
Do you feel that a lot of your clients are using a lot of those OEM platforms, or are a lot of your customers, maybe they used it, for the first year when it was included, perhaps, but maybe they don't, you know, resubscribe. You know, what do you kind of see?
That's a very good observation. We're seeing it all over the board. I like to think that it would get better, but some guys will say, well, it was good while it's free, but I'm not paying for it. Then you got the other guys that see more value in it. So everybody's value to that certain perks is very different. I think, you know, we're seeing a lot more of it be integrated into the machines. But I tell you, Jared, there's a lot of older equipment still out there. You know, not everybody can afford to go buy a new tractor, or not everybody can afford the latest and greatest of this technology. And there's still a lot of guys that want to do this that are running equipment that's, you know, a little older. And there's not a thing wrong with that.
Yeah. I am definitely not in a situation on our farm. You know, my brother and father, mother, sister, with a cow-calf operation. And we try to grow some corn in Kansas, but not like your corn. Sorghum, wheat, those types of things. We definitely have older equipment, but we don't let that, I don't want to say it be an excuse, but maybe be a barrier to at least getting into data. Isn't that still out there, Scott, that if you're not...
And you know, there's still that myth. There's still that myth out there that if I don't have this, I can't do this. And if I can't do this, then I can't collect data. And that's not wrong. That's wrong. You know, if you've got just a simple planner that maybe is not, you're not recording as applied data, you can still make that monitor apply where you planted variety X and variety Z. And that's a good start.
Yeah. So I think that's really, again, great sound advice from someone who's living and breathing this every day. This precision agriculture value proposition is not just for large farms that have all brand new equipment every year. If you have older equipment, and maybe you have some auto steer or section control, or maybe you don't. Maybe you're just using some kind of a rate controller. You're saying to our listeners, there's still a lot of data that's valuable being captured by those older systems.
Mm-hmm. That is correct. And it's just a matter of making sure you're collecting it and you've got it set up right. And a lot of times we'll see a system that, you know, they might not have the widths right, or something glitched and it changed. And so it's something that you have to be aware of at all times.
Do you feel that some growers are in situations where it's the, I can kind of relate to this in my agriculture and our farm is kind of the, hey, it's working. You know, the planter's working, the sprayer's working, et cetera. You know, the number seems to be reading close enough. Don't mess with it. Don't adjust anything. Don't manipulate anything. You know, almost like it's a mechanical gear assembly. You know, don't adjust anything. It's working. Do you find that, I guess, mentality sometimes with producers?
Oh, yeah.
How do you break through some of those things, Scott? I guess it's just a matter of kind of building trust.
It's just a matter of building trust and educating them. You know, change is hard for any of us. And if a guy doesn't think that it change is needed, then he's not open to it. So you know, if you kind of can educate him on why and the hows, I think it makes the transition a lot easier. And just explain to him why and what you can, what this, I guess it's a big education of showing them why it is important to do it.
Now, do you think that producers, again, from these various levels that we've been discussing, maybe just getting started, or they're in on it quite a ways, do they have to have a trusted person like yourself, Scott, at Budke Precision Ag Services? Do they have to find someone like you, or what advice would you give those folks, you know, wanting to get started? But, you know, maybe I know for me personally, sometimes you don't want to ask someone to help you with something because, you know, you don't want to bother them, or you don't want to let people know that you're uncomfortable with that item. Right. I think that's just human nature in some cases. What advice would you give to those growers that you know are out there and they're gathering information? Maybe they're hesitant to contact someone, or they're hesitant to try it or get started on their own.
Well, there, you know, there's a lot of things out there on the internet now that you can search and learn how to do it on your own. If you don't want to do it on your own, then look for somebody that you trust, and just, you know, whether it be your local implement dealer or it be your local fertilizer dealer, they all know who's out there and who does things or who can help you, and just get some advice from somebody that you trust. You know, I tell a lot of guys, I said, you know, collecting this data is no different than you hiring an accountant. You hire an accountant to keep track of your financial records, and you pay him a good bunch of money. His role is not any more less or more important as your advisors on what decisions you're making to make that money. So I try to explain to guys, you know, hey, I can be just as important as that attorney, that accountant to your operation as, you know, and that.
Yeah, because you're focusing on strategies that ultimately dictate profitability at the end of the season. If something is on an economic threshold line, you're helping the producer to kind of lean the right way towards profitability, right, Scott?
That's correct. I mean, at the end of the day, that's what it's about, is making a better return on your investment.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. I know that profitability is constantly a focus in our agricultural minds. Every one of our listeners know that this stuff is expensive and it's time consuming, and we've got to start breaking through. So lots of great things that we've gone through on the podcast today. Again, I think there's probably other things that we haven't even touched on. We really didn't get to, you know, the value of moisture sensors and other sensors and systems that maybe you're using. But I think we got a really good overview of getting started in data, breaking through those data barriers, kind of dispelling some myths. As we conclude here in our discussion, Scott, are there any points that you'd like to make sure our audience knows for 2021, maybe focus on this or do it in this way?
Well, just one thing to keep in mind, there's no right and wrong way to do it. You got to make your own way that you're comfortable with doing first. Find that trusted advisor that you can work with that can help your operation. You know, if you don't want to ask your fertilizer dealer, ask a good friend, one of your fellow farmers that you have coffee with, who he has or who he uses. That's the best word of mouth that we find. You know, I'm to the point now where we're just about as full as we can do, but I'm always willing to try to do more for guys. But a lot of my recommendations that are from farmer to farmer is how I have been successful.
Yeah. Word of mouth. Yeah. And that just, that just speaks to, you know, your capabilities, Scott, and your understanding of what this is. Cause there are definitely some complicated scenarios that you can break through. Just like those examples you gave about an attorney or an accountant or someone else that's on that trusted advisor team, building that team around your farming operation, with people who share with one another and are all working towards a common initiative of making the farm more profitable, more stable. Yep. That's just fantastic. It's hard for me as a product owner, as a product manager, you know, not to direct customers to our TAP product. But I think it's important for people to know there's a lot of things out there. And if they find something that works for them and they're having success with that and they're enjoying that experience, that's a great first step, right? There's no one thing that works for everybody.
No. Stick with it and don't get discouraged is one thing. You know, if it doesn't work, don't get discouraged and just completely quit. Let's find a solution to make it work.
Persevere.
And I think you know as well as I do, when we both first started in this situation, nobody knew what it was going to be today and know how things were going to work. So I always kind of classified us early adopters of the old, back in the old AMS days. We were kind of like a MacGyver. We had to, when something didn't work, instead of just throwing our hands up and say, hey, this don't work, we were always looking for a way to make things work. And I think that's what's really,
yeah, a pineapple and a paperclip and some duct tape or whatever. Some of our listeners, they don't have any idea who MacGyver even is. I think they might have rebooted that show again, but nobody's got the original box set, you know. But I'm sure some of our grower listeners know exactly who that is. But that's, in a way, that is farming. You are, in a sense, given certain things and you make it work. And I guess what I hear you kind of urging our growers on, you know, is they're probably comfortable MacGyvering a grain bin or a tarp that's not working quite right or whatever. You're kind of spurring them on to say, have that same mentality in this data scenario is what I kind of hear you saying. Is that right?
That's exactly right. You know, it's no different than when the planter or something breaks down and you're trying to figure out how you're going to get this field done before it rains this afternoon. We all figure out a way that tie strap or that piece of baling wire can keep us rolling to get that field done. It's the same difference when you're looking at data. There's a way to use it and fix it. We just got to get to that person.
Well, I tell you, again, I want to thank you for your time. If all our listeners obtain the advice you gave about, you know, when you're on the edge of the field and it's time to go, just take a breath and spend a little extra time finding that field that's already in that drop down or finding that item that's already in that list. I think that item alone would change in many cases the quality or the accuracy of the data being produced by maybe 10-20 fold, right?
Oh, exactly, Jared. That's the big thing. Just if you can't find it, just close your eyes, take a deep breath, and look at it again, and I'm gonna bet it's there.
Probably is. Well, Scott, I can't thank you enough for your time on TopCon Talks Agriculture today. It's been a great discussion. You know, again, busting through those myths of data and breaking down the complexity of data and information in precision agriculture. Thanks so much for your time. And for all those listeners out there, be sure to go check our historical podcast list. We have lots of other topics and guest speakers. Thanks so much, Scott. Enjoy the rest of your day. Bye for now.
All right, Jared. Well, it was a pleasure being here, and thank you so very much.